Make your next move with American Express Business Platinum. You'll get 5x membership rewards points on flights and prepaid hotels booked on amextravel.com. Plus, enjoy access to the American Express Global Lounge Collection. And with the welcome offer of 150,000 points, your business can soar to all new heights. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/business-platinum. Amex Business Platinum, built for business by American Express.
Bored with your boring cardio? Stop pedaling that snooze cycle to Nowheresville and try some cardio that's actually fun. Supernatural Fitness, available on MetaQuest. Isn't that right, Jane Fonda?
Cardio will never be boring again.
Sweat to the beat of thousands of chart-topping songs inside stunning virtual landscapes.
Bet your stationary bike can't do that.
Visit GetSupernatural.com and join the next fitness revolution. Supernatural VR Fitness, only on MetaQuest. Rated T for teen.
Be honest. When's the last time you had a homemade meal? We get it. Between meetings, workout classes, and the kids' after-school sports, who's got time to cook? That's where HelloFresh comes in. No matter how busy you get, HelloFresh has everything you need to get an easy, home-cooked meal on the table. With flavor-packed recipes like Parmesan herb-crusted salmon, you'll be filling your kitchen with the cozy aromas of a homemade meal in no time. So go ahead, try HelloFresh. It's homemade, made easy. Learn more at HelloFresh.com.
See how they're scoring on us? Shots left and right.
I know. They know our next play before we even make it.
We got to tighten up off the court, too. Businesses track and sell our personal information. They dunk on us all the time with that data.
Wait, what do you mean?
You have to exercise your privacy rights. If you don't opt out of the sale and sharing of your information, businesses will always have the upper hand.
The ball is in your court. Get your digital privacy game plan at privacy.ca.gov.
Welcome, everybody, to The Psychologists Are In. I am Maggie Lawson.
And I'm her podcast partner in crime, Timothy Elmondson.
And today we are talking about Season 8, Episode 1. Cannot believe we are at Season 8. How did that happen? Time flies when you're having fun. This episode, one of my most favorite titles, Lock, Stock, Some Smoking Barrels, and Burton Guster's Goblet of Fire. Written by Steve Franks and Kel Cahoon, directed by Steve Franks, and Steve Franks is our wonderful guest today. We are so excited to have him, and it's fun because he has been telling us for a while, when you get to Lock, Stock, I want to do it. So, he has so many great stories. Please enjoy.
Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Tim. Happy New Year. This is our first one in the new year.
Happy New Year to you.
Yes.
Hey, can I do a little intro for what we're doing, Maggie?
Yes.
So because this is the first episode of Season 8 of the show Psych, not necessarily the eighth season of The Psychologist or in a Psychiatry Podcast, we figured we had to start the ending with the man who gave us the beginning, our dear friend and all the font of all things psych, Mr. Steve Franks.
Thank you. And by the way, you actually were forced by me to have me on for this episode because I insisted when we did the one with the, you know, the musical and all that whenever you do this, I must be here. And Kel should have his own podcast with this one as well.
Yeah, actually, we could do that as well. Wait, Kel, right, because you wrote with Kel on this?
Yes, the first time I wrote with Kel. And it was so much fun. We ended up writing a pilot together.
I have a very important question to ask you.
Awesome. Who, me or Steve? Right. Yeah.
Well, actually, it's to both of you. I'll go ladies first. Maggie, my co-host, are you ready to help me podcast the shit out of this very special beginning of Season 8, The Psychologists Are In? I've already messed that up.
I have been waiting to podcast the shit out of it with you in this new year for way too long. So, yes. You're doing good, Tim. You keep going.
Steve, are you ready to help my dear friend Maggie Lawson and I podcast the shit out of this very special episode?
I would be so honored to help you guys, to assist in the podcasting of the shit of this right now. To take all the shit and podcast all of it out right now in this very, very location. Let's do this.
This is one of the greatest titles of titles, like, ever. Even I was like, oh yes. Oh, it's still, cause when I emailed you, I was just going to call it Lockstock. I was going to be like, hey Steve, we're coming up on Lockstock. And I was like, no, I'm going to say the whole, I got to say the whole thing. It's just too good.
And do you have it written down somewhere so you can say the whole thing?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Give it to me.
Are you ready? So yes. We are at season 8. I have a teeny cold, so I kind of have the sniffles, but I also have the sniffles because we're at season 8. Like, how did this happen? We got here so fast, but we are season 8, episode 1, Lock, Stock, Some Smoking Barrels, and Bert and Guster's Goblet of Fire.
Well,
did I get it all?
You nailed it, and you gave it a dramatic twinge that no one was expecting.
This
is the magic of Maggie Lawson. Like, she's gonna phone this one in. No, of course not.
No, we missed it by a little bit, but we almost hit the 11-year anniversary of it airing, which was January 8th, 2014. Yeah.
Say those numbers again.
January 8th, 2014. 11 years. Awesome. Almost like to the month, you know. It's pretty crazy. And written by Steve Franks and Kel Cahoon. Who was it directed by?
Oh, the genius of Mr. Steve Franks.
The genius of Steve Franks. I was like, oh my God, did I miss this? We went to London. Anyway, so
I'm sorry. We can't go any one second further without the elephant in the room. You are not in this episode, and I call absolute bullshit on this.
Well, it was bullshit. I was doing a bullshit something else. and yes. And Steve was nice enough to, with us knowing it was our last season, an opportunity came up. I know, for me to do both. And Steve, I don't know, I can't, like, being the most kind and understanding person on the planet, was like, we'll figure this out. And we did. But it meant that I wasn't in a little bit of season 8, a lot of season 8, half of it.
How many were you in? You were in more than 5, though, weren't you?
I think I was in, how many episodes are in season 8?
It's 10, right? Is it 10?
Yeah. So I think I did like 5 or 6. Yeah. I think I'm not in 3 or 4.
And this was the first one, obviously, that you're not in, that besides the
other than title. Don't say it. You said it. Other than the episode we do not discuss.
But we don't discuss it?
No, we do. I have to say, though, I feel like I deserve it for season 8. Like, if we you all can give me all the shit that you want. And because of that, I will give no shit about the pilot. Because the pilot is so good, and it's why we're here, and it's what a lot of people say is their favorite episode, because it's where it all began. And so I love the pilot. I'm sad I'm not in it, but anyway, yeah.
And I still have the casting sheets from the pilot, which says Maggie Lawson not available because of the other show that you were doing that shall remain probably nameless.
Crumbs. That show is called Crumbs.
That's it.
I'm a big believer, this is so off topic, but in titles. Uh-huh. I believe there's an energy in titles. Like, I really do. Like, so, you know, if you say like The Losers, or I remember reading a pilot called The Zeros. What'd you say?
The soon to be canceled.
The soon to be canceled. That's the way I thought about it. Yeah. And I'm like, it's called Crumbs. This can't last.
I just booked this job. It's called Never Made It to Mid-Season.
Never got a back 9. Anyway. All right. So yes, I was doing that show and I wasn't available. And then I was.
Well, and here's what's amazing about this episode, because we had a certain amount of time that we were allowed to have Kirsten and Corbin. So there's no Corbin, there's no Kirsten in this. There's no Woody. And most importantly, we have provided Tim Amundsen with the easiest work week he ever had on any show ever. Do you remember, Tim?
Absolutely. I whenever a new episode would come out, I'd need to go to Richard Coleman and go, Richard, give me the schedule, please, so I can make my flight home, my flight plans home to.
Did you fly in, fly out same day? Because that's maybe possible. No, I'm kidding. But yeah.
I'll tell you what happened.
By season eight, I was like, Allison was like, hey, how about you get your ass home and help me with these kids? So this is one of those like, I had two scenes. I mean, I'm not going to complain about only having two pages in the side of dialogue because Matt Gillison had nothing. So I'm not complaining at all, but this was one of those like, oh, that's a really light schedule. Great. I get to go home.
Well, Tim, do you remember also we were dealing with all this stuff and there's a whole bunch of stories that probably go in this episode or go beyond that. And the thing about this one was we knew we were limited in who we could use and all that. So, I mean, that was sort of one of the catalysts of let's do a London episode where we can take just Sean and Gus. And then we had to put Tim in. Maggie was off doing more Hollywood and often. You know, we never say the rule on our show is like if anybody has an opportunity beyond the show, especially as we knew the show was ending with that season, it's like, of course, we were just negotiating of how many days can we have Maggie while she's shooting two television shows at the same time. So we knew, okay, great, let's finally do this London episode because that's a great way to address that. This episode was supposed to air second. And it turned into they liked it a lot and they moved it up to the season premiere, which means when we get to Tim Amundsen's hair later in the show, it's like, why does he have that haircut? Why is he dressed as a patrol officer? None of that is answered. That's a surprise for you to figure out in the next week because we shot Seize the Day to be it was written and designed to be the season premiere.
Right.
And that's so. Funny.
Thank you for calling out my hair early because I was most proud of my hair in this season.
Oh yeah, it's good. It's hair. Tight and you're a Terminator is what you are. And this one, the Robert Patrick Terminator.
Well, this was very definitely T2.
Yeah.
I really liked the opening credits too. I was like, I know there it was the longer version for this one, but I was like, oh, I love when we have the longer version. I just I know we can't always do it, but I was like, oh, this is a good one. I like watch. Sometimes it'll say skip intro and I'll be like, and I'll just watch long enough to be like, is it the short one or the long one?
We added the little bullets at the very end to the little gunshot. Thing. And this is the extended version. So if you go onto the Peacock, which is where everybody should watch this, you get the 35 minutes of entertainment rather than the 32 minus credits and all that, whatever it is. This is like one of the longer ones that we have. And there's so much in this that we cut out that was so fun and so funny. And it was going up. We knew here's a backstory that's going to be a podcast exclusive. And so at the beginning, we would have a meeting with the studio network before each season starts. And before season 7, they said to us, hey, we're going to renew the show. We're going to renew. We're going to do 2 more years. And then next year is going to be the last year. So we knew going into season 7 that we had 2 more years left. This is why Maggie should be doing another television show. This is why you're on the cusp of Gallivant. You know, all these things are on the horizon for everybody. But what we didn't know is, We got together, we did our 16 episodes for season 7, and we assumed that we had 16 episodes for season 8. And they said, oh yeah, by the way, we made a couple more pilots than we expected. So you guys, you can do it in 10, right? So all of our plans went out the window, and the 6 other episodes that we thought we were going to do and the directors we had lined up, suddenly they turned to, this is a co-write between these two writers, and all the things that we were going to do individually turned into a tighter thing. It was easier because of Maggie's opportunities and scheduling and all that stuff, but it changed the trajectory for the entire last season. So, you know, when you know it's your last season and you're psych, you're going to do every crazy thing that you didn't get a chance to do.
Yeah.
So the, doing a Guy Ritchie London episode was at the top of my list.
Maggie, are you feeling the pangs that I am? Like, this is so, it's, this was such a weird season because A, you weren't in it and as much, and we knew it was the end. So it just, it, the whole thing just felt sort of strange and off. And I mean, I felt like I was missing a limb for a lot of the episode, a lot of some
big, very, very weird. Like, it's weird watching it. It's weird. Like the, like, it's just a strange thing. It's also really hard. It's like, God, this was our last season. And then like going back to like what that felt like in life. And like, we had just known this show and this, this schedule and these people and our, the way we lived up there for like so long. And then it was nice to get the, like, oh, at the beginning of season seven, like you'll have two more seasons, heads up. Like that was nice. And that'll be the final one, but you get the time to like, but then as it rolled in, I didn't remember that we didn't know it was going to be a shortened episode, but I remember it just, it felt like, not like things were like falling away. It just sort of felt like, oh my God, like, yeah, a limb. Also not being there. Like, I remember, I don't know, like even coming to like the rap party and being like, oh my God, I how are we not doing this? And then in 2017, we got to again. But like, you know, it was, this is weird. Anyway,
I still did have a limb in 2017. I mean, I had it, but it just wasn't working.
That was that thing in the papers, right, Tim?
It was in all the papers, yes.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I remember that.
Mute if I have to. I'm so sorry, you all, with my little cold.
I also have, Maggie and I give each other colds over texting, I think.
We did. He had a cold like a week and a half ago, and then I was like, oh, thanks, you gave me your cold, even though I haven't seen you.
So I'm all a little snotty as well.
It's so funny because I have been wanting to do one of these live, like in person, where we're sort of in the same general vicinity. And this would have been the worst one to do because I would have got Maggie's cold, right?
So, well, here's the great news.
Probably the original is Tim's cold. I think I had it, then I give it to you, then you give it back to me.
We have been talking about this, though, doing some more in person. I have this studio. Cloud 10 has their studio set up now. It would be so fun, Steve. Also, I mean, you know, we're also talking about another maybe potential, like we did the live show in LA, maybe another one of the, like, we'll do that. But yes, this would not have been what you would have been like, thanks a lot, guys. Like, thanks a lot. You bring me in person when you have a cold. But I'm actually feeling a lot better. I just sound.
Well, just pretend like you're getting emotional from all the stories.
I was like, is this my sniffles? Because we're going into season eight and it's like, ugh. Anyway, so, all right.
Speaking of weirdness in season eight, and just the psychoticness of the timing. And it was so weird. I mean, as lovely as Mira Sorvino is, it was so strange every time she was on set with me. Cause like, who's this Betsy Bennigan? I need my Juliet Lawson.
I was jealous though. I was like, she's Sorvino. She's amazing. Oh my God. And I'm like, no one's going to ever remember me.
I saw Mira we were both just doing a Albuquerque Comic Con and saw Mira. And she was lovely as always and says hello to everyone.
And so she stepped into an impossible situation trying to step into the shoes of Maggie Lawson and handled it admirably and got lots of big laughs and helped us, you know, bring this thing home. And, you know, it was pretty amazing.
She had to figure out how to navigate how to work with this a-hole.
That's she called me. She was like, can I have some help and some tips? I was like, nope, you are on your own. good luck. I'm kidding.
Don't get him.
I'm waiting.
Midnight.
All right, let's dive in. Do Lock, Stock, Some Smoking Barrels, and Bert and Guster's Goblet of Fire. Recount. I'm going to dive in, okay? Are we diving in?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Sean and Gus recount their adventure in London through a Guy Ritchie-style voiceover with a bad British accent from Sean. That was really bad. It's revealed that Gus is in London for a Harry Potter convention called PotterCon, because of course he is. and that Sean has been summoned by Interpol to help on an undercover sting. Winston, I love Winston. A mid-level investigator at Interpol explains that their inside guy on the sting, an American driver, was arrested and can no longer be a part of the operation. Then Winston tells Sean that he bears a striking resemblance to the driver and that Interpol needs Sean to go undercover as him. They tell Sean and their boss, Royston Staley, sent for him. Sean and Gus go meet Royston and are shocked to see that Royston is actually who?
Pierre Despero.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Despero.
Or is he?
We have skipped something very, very, very important.
Oh, I mean, we have thousands of things to talk about just in that description.
Yes, which we do.
I won't say all 1,000 of them.
But
I'll keep it down to
457 of them.
In terms of our podcast, we skipped something important.
What was that?
You look amazing today, Maggie, even with a cold.
Oh, God. Thank you. Do you love that I have a hat on so you cannot see the water that keeps like falling out of my eye on this side? And thank you. You look fantastic too, Tim. And
sure, Steve, I did a little something for you too.
I did. I love when he does the pineapple sternbush.
It's perfect.
It's just a little peep, you know? Anyway, yes.
Steve, you also look handsome as always. We miss
thank you.
You.
Thank you for that. I know it's an empty compliment that is just a requirement just to whoever the third person is to get in, but I'll take it. I'll cherish it. I'll hold it tight. I'll wrap it up in a little gold thing like it's a chocolate at Christmas and then open it tomorrow morning.
Okay, so are we in London? Are we not in London? Wait, what is happening?
Well, obviously,
I know we're not in London.
USA Network said... We're flying the whole company over to London. You're going to spend a week and a half there. We are primarily down in Gastown in British Columbia. And this was, a lot of scouts go down there. And if you haven't been down to Gastown, it's got all kinds of lamps and fog and British looking buildings. And we thought this is the opportunity to do our second Psych Goes Abroad without going anywhere. And, it inspired this whole thing. And for me, it was like the biggest wish fulfillment to get to do a Guy Ritchie type thing. And knowing it was the last season, we just allowed ourselves to get as crazy as we possibly could. And then to play around stylistically in this genre with all the fun cutting and the structure of the story and the graphics and everything, it's fusing Guy Ritchie movies, Ocean's 11, and Harry Potter, which naturally all go together perfectly.
And Sexy Beast.
Oh,
and
yes.
Sexy Beast. Yeah. Lock, Stock, too. But like, okay. Oh, yeah. Sexy Beast, too. What were these different ideas that all had to become one because of the cut down of episodes? Or were you like, no, this makes sense?
Well, we knew we were going to do the Guy Ritchie. And then because we're going to London, I thought, well, why are we not? So we needed something for Gus to do. And Harry Potter seemed the logical thing. So those two coming together felt very much felt very much organic to the whole situation. Kelly Kolchak, who is an amazing Harry Potter fan. I was at the very beginning of understanding anything Harry Potter, so I had to go to Kelly many times to ask, what does this mean? What does that mean? And fortunately, because I wrote it with Cal Cahoon, the ultra-talented member of our writing team, who is the only one who hailed directly from oil country in Texas. That's the natural person to do a British episode with.
Makes so much sense. You were like, who is the right guy for this? I know, Cal Cahoon from Texas.
And the sexy beast of it all. I mean, we've been saying turn the job yes to each other for years, and that movie is spectacular and ridiculous and just awesome. So that scene in particular, when they do that in the alley, which I guess we'll get to, is the hardest at least one of the three hardest I've ever laughed on set.
My favorite scene in the entire episode.
Oh, God.
It was amazing. And by the way, the greatest thing is that beginning where the camera moves out from the psych office and then goes up into space. That whole thing actually was the based on, hey, we pulled that window out before for the musical. And it's like, hey, we know how to do this. So we figured out, we just duplicated that, which we realized how long it takes to unscrew the entire window from your frame, because we did not have enough money to like build a duplicate window. We had to literally tear it apart and then take the window out and do the same thing. So
Mr. Key Grip is like, great, thanks, you jerk.
Oh yeah, there is so much of this, and this was flying by the seat of our pants this episode, because I don't know if you remember, Tim, but we shot Seize the Day first.
Uh-huh.
And then we shot this episode, and Seize the Day is Lasser's journey, and it is Lasser's that's going to be great next week when you guys go through it. But it is such a Tim-centric episode, and Tim was so happy when the script came out for this, and he literally had two scenes that we were going to shoot on the same day that we moved on the schedule, much to Richard Coleman's unhappiness, right up to Tim's last day of the other episode, so Tim could actually take off and actually go see his family during this time. So we shot,
thank you, Steve.
And I believe, Tim, we shot it just before lunch. So you did your two scenes. You went to lunch. You took a nice ride down to the airport, and then you went home for 6 days or 7 days.
Wow.
Or whatever it was. Yeah, it was magical.
That's so funny.
And I do love that. I do love this. And I don't know if we cut out the part of the beginning, but this was supposed to air second. And the fact that it ends up airing first leaves us no explanation of why Tim's hair is like that. No. Why Tim is dressed as in a regular patrol officer's clothes. Like,
you mean dope?
Yes, exactly. Amazing. And so it was. There were many things that were different and unique about this episode. And talk about fun to edit. You know, Dexter Adriano is the one who edited this episode. And it was one of those things where we just realized, you know, if in normal storytelling, you have to, you know, you sort of have to build the scenes together. And in this, all the rules were out the window. Yeah. And it was just such an opportunity to like, oh my gosh, we can get as many stock shots as we want. But then the budget came in and we said, oh, we can get 3 stock shots and we'll reuse them twice. What was that? In
a helicopter over Westminster when they got that shot of the eye of London.
That was no, that wasn't. I unfortunately they wouldn't send us out to do any of the that.
Like, we didn't get 2 days in London for exteriors.
we were just wondering, because we were so worried we weren't going to get a shot, the shot of the corgi walking through the grass.
Oh, and wow. So good.
So we were very hopeful that we were stretching the budget and getting the cheapest version of every stock shot that we could find to give us enough of Britain and the UK to sell the idea where we were.
Yes. Well, I bought it, and I know some fans were like, "Wait, did they really go to London?" So that's really good. And also, so we just met Cary Elwes. So, I mean, we've met him, but I mean, we've just been introduced to Pierre Despereaux again, aka Royston Staley. He explains that 10 years ago he was an employee at Interpol who was given a mission to go undercover as a man named Pierre Despereaux.
It's a whole new backstory. And once again, the key with Despereaux is you can never know if any of it's true, if some of it's true, or just one thing is true. And I remember we sent the script to Cary and we were so proud of it. Cary called me and says, I love it. We welcomed him. He came in, stayed at the Sutton Place Hotel. We went across the street to our favorite restaurant. We sat down. We were just so ready for him to just regale us with how much he loved it. And he's all, so what happens? He's all, I'm this guy, but I wasn't this guy, and I created this character. And I go, yes, there's a lot of levels of twist. And I go, on screen, it'll make total sense. But Carrie was right. It was like this whole thing that just turns everything upside down. And in the end, I mean, with Despero, and we've done three already, and this was the fourth one. And so we'd sort of close the trilogy off. And then when we had season eight, it's like, okay, one more time. And we're just going to go nuts with this. But for me, the most important thing is at the end, you still cannot know if Despero is real, if he was ever a person, if he's, is he a thief? Yeah. Is he lying? Has he been an Interpol agent the whole time? That is Jose. Yes, exactly. It has to be that. And that's where we were able to bring in the whole idea of Life of Pi. It's like Sean is always going to choose that Despero is a genius and amazing because he's the only person that Sean idolizes completely in the whole world. And so, you know, and Gus is going to always think that Despero is lying. So that's the fun dynamic of these two guys with this character.
Wow. Yeah, it's so good. I love that we don't ever really give up anything. Like, we still manage to leave it. It's okay. I don't know if we should leave this in or not, but we should. I feel he lost his house, I know, in the fire. So so many people did. This is like so weird. But I was thinking about that as I was like, oh God, he looks great in every episode we have, but there was something particular, like it's particularly like when we turn around and reveal that it's him, or I was like, oh. He was excited about this one too.
Well, and you know what? And the thing about Carrie's hair was doing something spectacular in this during the fight with Vinnie Jones. It's like, you know, he's like throwing punches and it's just falling down perfectly into this. Yes, it's very Wesley in the Princess Bride. And I think Carrie's like looking as healthy as he's ever had in this episode.
Yeah. Right.
And, It was so great. I mean, it really put together the whole thing that Carrie comes in and is the modern Cary Grant in this episode.
Yes, he is.
And the fun part about it is, you know, we've had Despero sort of being the comedic foil, and this time he had to play straight man to Sean and Gus, and it was such a fun way to turn the tide when he's playing the character of Royston Staley.
So it was
a great opportunity. What was that, Tim?
I'm so confused by all of it. Who and what, huh?
We're gonna get there. Okay, so Pierre Despero, where are we now? Okay, years later, okay, after the completion of his mission, he returned to Interpol to create a different undercover mission, a mission that would crack the ranks of Interpol's most wanted criminal. Who?
Is it Ronnie Ives?
Yes, another amazing name, by the way.
Yes, by the way, Kel is responsible for all the names, Deirdre and Harry without the H.
Yes, he is like, I was like, these are some of the best names, and they're like all in one episode. Ives
really sounds like a 1970s British cabaret singer.
Does, right? Ronnie Ives.
It would have been Ingmar Humperdinck's
criminal
guitar player on tour.
And Parky, the guy who gets shot in the face in the very beginning.
Yes. Oh my God, so good. Like, what? It's so good. Okay. Ives is a ruthless criminal who never uses the same crew twice on any heist and is exceptionally good at evading authorities. Interpol knows the only way to catch him is with someone on the inside. Sean is now their inside guy, the soon-to-be getaway driver for Ives. So time is of the essence. Despero starts training Sean for the mission. So good. Despero tells Sean to memorize everything in his lookalikes file so that when Sean goes undercover, Ronnie will believe he's the same guy he's originally hired to be his driver.
I got an objection. Of course, Ronnie's played by my pal Vinnie Jones.
Yes, who's awesome. We are like, what a cool get. And also just with this episode, I mean, it's so perfect.
So my question is, when you knew it was this amazing title, when did Vinny come into the because Vinny is most famous for Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch from the Guy Ritchie world.
Well, we get a casting list of people that potentially, and we never get the person who's like at the top of the list. You know, they'll say these are all the people, and then we figure out who's available. And Vinny was the top choice. And the fact that he was available and willing to come over, and I thought to myself, this could really plant the seeds of a future show called Gallivant. And it was exciting to me that this could actually work out for Tim in the future. So Vinny coming down and bringing his presence and his physicality to it. And Vinny's also one who's like, he's throwing in, I mean, we thought we were coming up with all this great British slang, and he's the one who's like kaput and tucked up and sold the royals and all that stuff. That was just, it peppered in so much color to the dialogue. And the great thing about it is when I direct is I usually, when the actors come on set, I know that we're not, I'm sure I've said this on the podcast before, so excuse me if I'm repeating, but when the actors come on set, I'd say, listen, if you don't have the most fun you've ever had on set, then I haven't done my job. And usually they're like, oh, wow, this is going to be something interesting. And Vinny just looked at me, he goes, we'll see. Ah! We'll see. And I'm sure that, and it wasn't till, and this is skipping ahead, the moment later when he throws Ari out of the moving vehicle, that we knew he went down the rabbit hole with us, because we were shooting that with a green screen, didn't really throw a guy out a moving van, but he throws the actor out. The guy goes on the pad, and then he goes, Ari, and he dives out after him onto the road. And I'm like, we've got him.
He's having fun. He's having a good time.
Yeah, it was such a great time. As we did.
Wait, where was I? Oh, here we go. Ives. Okay, Ives, a ruthless criminal. Okay, yes. Time is of the essence. Okay, yes. Wait, unfortunately, Sean has trouble with his training. So Despero decides to hook Sean up with an earpiece. Yes?
I'm sorry to interrupt, but how psychotic could you brought this up? Time is of the essence is one of my favorite songs from Gallivant.
Oh, look at that. Look at that. Mara, did you do that on purpose? I bet you did. I'm kidding. Ronnie. Okay. So, what am I saying? Did I already say time is of the essence? Did I already read that whole paragraph? Okay. Despero is giving Sean an earpiece for when he is in the field. So dressed and ready for the mission, we haven't even talked about the outfits yet. Sean meets with Ives and his crew at the Bloody Bucket, a local pub. Another great name.
Once again, Kel Cahoon is the master of names. Anything British, he's nailed it.
I love it.
Sign for the Bloody Bucket, which our art department made,
so good.
Is above and beyond.
Despero is outside stationed in a surveillance van, guiding Sean on the mission through Sean's earpiece. Despero tells Sean his main goal is to find out where and when the next heist is going to be and get out. Before Sean can do this, Ives reveals there is a traitor in their midst and that the job is off. Sean panics, thinking it's him. Tensions rise, but Ives calls someone else's name in the group. Ives outs him as a traitor and promptly, what does he do to him, Tim?
Murders him.
Correct. Ives returns to the meeting area and Sean convinces him to go through with the job. Concerned near the one, yes.
Cheek.
What?
I love the blood across your cheek. That was a great touch.
Good.
And the funny thing is that Vinny comes in with a really nice touch and he goes, job done. And then he points to the blood on his face. And that was, it's just, those are the things that you don't know are going to happen when you hire an actor. And, it was a lot of fun.
I do remember James because I asked James how Vinny was, and he goes, well, he was a bit of a Neanderthal in the beginnings, which Vinny, that I'm not saying anything bad because Vinny would be the first to, admit he can be, because, but then he kind of got the fact that we were having fun. So he realized he could have fun.
Yeah. That's what he could do, you know?
And we bonded over Curly Whirlies, which are the rope chocolate caramel he was the one who added, I know, when I said, when the line was, they're delicious.
Which is delivered perfectly. Hang on. Here we go. Concerned Wait, where are we? Where are we?
We're at the earpiece. But by the way, we have to note that Sean was the dead ringer for the driver who got arrested, and the dead ringer we cast Byron Briscoe, James's stunt double, and put them face to face to show just how exactly alike these two guys look.
Wow,
that's fun to see Byron's face without having to cover it before he goes into the water.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize, I thought Byron wouldn't want to have a line. And he was, after we wrapped the scene, he goes, I wish I had a line. And I'm, oh my God, I wrote the whole scene just so you wouldn't have to say.
Hilarious. Okay. Where are we now?
The jacket.
Concerned with one. Wait, the jacket.
You said they puts in the earpiece and then he's wearing the Smokey and the Bandit jacket. Which we actually got an actual Burt Reynolds signed jacket. So when James says it's not from the movie, obviously. I'm sure that Burt Reynolds probably signed tons and tons of those, but we got a legit, like, straight out of the exact replica of the Trans Am jacket.
Which is super fun, psychic prediction. James then went on to work with Burt and
That was before Psych. Psych. Yeah. Dukes of Hazzard was before Psych. Isn't that cool? He had a psych. What do we call that? Oh, wait. Is that what you were saying?
He had a psych ignition.
There we go.
It came full circle.
It came full circle. Yes, it did. Concerned there one person's.
The psych ignition, we just made that up. I don't think we've said psych ignition before.
I don't think we have either. We've said psychonic.
We've said psychic premonition before. We never said psychonition.
It's a new season and a new word.
Boy, that feels like it's worth a drink.
It is. Oh, okay. So drink up, everybody.
Well, I mean, we should have been drinking when he revealed that Burt Reynolds jacket, because it's so shockingly fire engine red, which of course
it is Pepto drink
family.
That's true. We missed that. How do we miss that?
I blame myself because we're so excited that Steve's here. We're talking about this.
Fire. I know, exactly. You know, every January I get so excited about resolutions. I'm ready to take on the world. And then, well, February happens and March. And suddenly that new year, new me energy fades. But what if some resolutions could just happen automatically? That's exactly what Acorns does for your money. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing so your money has a chance to grow for you, for your kids, and your retirement. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that fits you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorn lets you invest with the spare money you've got right now. You can start with $5 or even just your spare change. How great is that? Look, I've been there. I used to think investing felt overwhelming. But Acorns takes that stress away. It's simple, automatic, and honestly, it's kind of fun watching those little investments add up. Head to acorns.com/pineapple or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing on your future today. Paid non-client endorsement compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/pineapple.
Bored with your boring cardio? Stop pedaling that snooze cycle to Nowheresville and try some cardio that's actually fun. Supernatural Fitness, available on MetaQuest. Isn't that right, Jane Fonda?
Cardio will never be boring again.
Sweat to the beat of thousands of chart-topping songs inside stunning virtual landscapes.
Bet your stationary bike can't do that.
Visit GetSupernatural.com and join the next fitness revolution. Supernatural VR Fitness, only on MetaQuest. Rated T for teen.
Okay, concern there one person short. Sean says that he knows a guy named the Wizard who would be perfect for the mission. Sean goes outside and drags Gus in, who is wearing Harry Potter themed attire, wizard attire, complete with a magic wand. Ives agrees to bring on Gus as their new explosives expert. Gus tells everyone to refer to him as the Wiz. We follow the crew, Ronnie Ives, Deirdre, I want to say it right, Ari, Sean, and Gus.
Because you know, just in that country.
Ari, Sean, and Gus to a warehouse. Ronnie says that Sean and the Wiz need to prove themselves worthy for the mission before they begin. Sean is given a driving test and fails miserably. It's so good. Hitting every traffic cone in his path. Ivan misinterprets this as useful fearlessness and keeps showing on the job. Gus says,
wait, hold on. Tim has a question.
Yes. Oh, I can't see you.
When Sean and Gus are in the alley, the second he says, do the job, I just immediately my heart just grew seven sizes. It just gave me such joy watching them do this sexy.
When James does the tantrum and he circles around Dulé, I was right next to the camera out there. And I was I must have ruined the entire, I don't know how the sound didn't pick me up, because I was laughing so hard on every single one of these takes. And we were performing this in the writer's room for the entire, and then we broke this episode first, and then we kept performing it, and it was nothing compared to what those guys came up with.
Oh, that's so funny. I love that you all were like rehearsing the bits.
And the greatest thing is we couldn't control the street that's behind them. And so traffic had to go. And so we were required to have an actual member of our security team directing traffic. And so he was in the shot. There was no way to do the shot and not cover him. So we gave him a glowing one of those, I guess, safety vests. And he looked like one of those London traffic cops. So we just owned the fact that that our security guy had to be in the shot, and it gave such color to it. So it looked like it's Kensington.
So absolutely, it totally did. There were a couple times where I was like, "We did a really good job."
Like, yeah, by accident a lot of times, but yeah, we do.
So okay, Gus uses his magic props and nothing happens. He is almost exposed, but Despero blows up a nearby trash can to keep Gus's cover alive. Sean and Gus are now accepted as members of the crew. Sean and Gus head back to Interpol to touch base with Despero, but they're told he's in a meeting. They run into Winston instead, and they let him know they were able to steal. I can't see you all, so if you're trying to chime in, I'm sorry.
I think Tim is.
Yes.
No, I was just saying, we need to call out the psychonicness of the fact that Gus is going to, is it PotterCon?
PotterCon, yes.
The PotterCon, yeah. And we are all about to go do PsychCon in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yes, in April 11th of this year.
April 13th, I believe.
11th and 12th. Oh, 11th, 12th, and 13th. I think it is all 3 days. Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yes.
After this is done, this is going to be a tease for everybody. We've come up with, I think, the coolest thing for the Saturday night event at the con. People will talk about forever.
Okay. Oh my God, I'm so excited to hear this. I think, yes, I pitched something, but it was too much. It was going to be too much.
No, our job is to pitch something that's too much, and we'll do it in one of the 12 other ones we do, hopefully, in the future. As long as these keep being as successful as they've been so far, we'll just keep doing them. So we need ideas for a while.
That's forever. Okay, good. Great. Okay, so we now have our crew. Hold on. The Wizards prove themselves in the mission. Okay, so they run into Winston. We let them know they were able to steal Ronnie's key card to his office. In the same conversation with Winston, Sean and Gus find out that no one at the office knows much about Despero, and that he started working there when there was a staff turnover. Also, no one has met the man who supposedly hired Despero. Them. Stuyvesant.
Ben Stuyvesant.
That's right.
Named after our one of our editors, Kelly Stuyvesant, it took us years to learn to say her name properly, but there is a Stuyvesant in New York City, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there is. Yeah. Sean becomes suspicious. He calls Lassiter to get a background check on the two names after performing a little research. Yes.
Oh no, I'm just saying yes. Tim's in the here.
Lassiter reveals no one with those names exists. Despero is setting them up again. He's trying to find out where Ives' next job is so Despero can get in on the action. A disappointed Sean tells Winston the bad news. Sean and Gus head over to Ives' office with his key card to see what they find. There they find an English genealogy book and a few related documents, then discover that Ives' father recently passed away. Sean also finds a note in the trash can with the location for a security firm for the Royals. Sean then remembers that the mission involves robbing a house. So he puts two and two together because he's Sean, and he realizes Ives is going to rob one of the royal residences. Sean and Gus head to the door, only to be stopped by Ari. At gunpoint, I just like saying it. He negotiates their share of the heist for not telling Ives about their break-in. Sean and Gus head into Interpol to talk to Winston. Winston is looking up all the royal residences and is having trouble narrowing down which one is going to be robbed. Sean says he knows that the house has a kitchen with a south-facing window. Just then, Despero walks in and demands Sean and Gus come to his office. While they are following him, Sean gets a text from Ives that says, "Warehouse, now." Sean and Gus jet out of the Interpol and head to the warehouse. They tell Winston to keep Despero in the dark about their plan as they leave. As they arrive at the warehouse, they see everyone standing outside next to a van. It's time for the job, and Sean is thrown the keys to drive. Ives tells him they have to pick up one more replacement member after Ives pegs Ari as a rat. Ronnie throws Ari out of the speeding van, which is
there's the Vinnie Jones moment.
I appreciate that you're saying Ari and you're saying it the way we say it as opposed to Ari.
What is it?
That you're saying Ari as opposed to Harry.
It's Ari.
It is Ari. And I appreciate the fact that you're still going along with a gag.
It is Ari.
As the guys say, apparently there's no H in this language.
No.
And by the way, that soundstage where Sean hits that doubles as the warehouse, that's the soundstage we borrowed to shoot the telenovela in Homicidio.
Oh my God, really?
So we were actually expanding on our own lot into there. And we were supposed to get a much larger one, and we were going to have a lot more room to do the stunt with the Cooper, but a little Mini Cooper. But as it turns out, we had to make it even tighter. And James actually does some of the driving in there, which is pretty amazing.
Wow. That's really cool. I didn't know that.
Here's a little fun fact. During this season, I was actually driving a Mini Cooper in real lives.
What are the odds that we were? I wonder if it was the same one. No, it wasn't, because it was a left-hand drive, which also gave me my fate. I had two jokes that I was most happy to put in. One was Sean has to very coolly get in the car on the wrong side, and then James slides over to the actual proper side. And my other
in the American side, I was just like, I cannot wait to see how they're going to fix this, how they're going to mind him having to go over to the right-hand drive. And I was not disappointed.
Oh my God. And James's slide with the head as well. It's classic.
So good.
And I also loved when James was talking about bird flu. He goes, "But actually over here, they call it girl flu." And those are the kind of things that make me happy.
This is so good. Okay.
I heard the bird flu. I didn't hear the girl flu line on the show. Yeah. That's hilarious.
Okay, so the crew pulls up in front of a gated manor. As they approach the house, Despero tells Sean and Gus how Winston kept the info from him. They had to bring back his alter ego, Despero. Just then, Sean gets a call from Lassiter, who tells him that he was mistaken before, and the Vim Stuyvesant is a real person, but he was erased.
I'm sorry, would you say that when they get in the van, they're actually going to do the job?
They're there to do the job. And now, almost the rest of this entire episode takes place at this giant mansion, as well as the first time I'd ever used a drone was the first shot where it takes off out of the driveway, which is really hard because all of our crew trucks have to be parked somewhere in there. So that entire thing was shot in one day. They gave us one day to do all of that.
Really?
Which I don't know if it's 10 minutes of action, a fight. It was insane. And as you can tell from the ground, it's one of the biggest rainstorms. Because obviously we're shooting in April or wherever the beginning of the year is.
Yeah.
So it's soaked. I mean, we had to walk down to a farm across the way for lunch, and everybody's family was there because it's season 8.
Yeah.
So we're walking down these giant umbrellas, traipsing through the mud to get back, and there was so much to do. And then the interior of the van, where we green screen the guys inside the van and throwing them out. We had to shoot it there in the driveway that day for some reason, which escapes me now. So it was one of the longest, most packed days that I'd ever had on the series. And yet, you know, so much adrenaline and excitement going. And we ended up getting it all. But some of the stuff.
Always did. That's what's so crazy, I feel like, is we would have these like, oh my God. And we always look at the episodes. Like we always got it. Even if we didn't get it, we got it. Like,
yeah. Well, there's the moment where the van pulls up and they and the whole team gets out of the car to go inside once they go past the gate. Oh yeah, and we also had to do a visual effect explosion and blow dirt on every wind and dirt. And so, but there's a shot where they all get out of the van and there's like three lines and then everybody has to go in. And we had time for one shot. And so we told Marco, it's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have everybody walk by. Everybody says their line as they pass through. And we get one take, maybe two. And we took the second take and we got it. And it was...
Oh my God.
It gets your heart going really well.
Those days were so fun though. I know I wasn't like on this one, but like those, that's like, but when you get it, it almost makes it that much sweeter because you're like, oh my God, we got it. We actually,
Yeah. And when you see the robbery, when you see the results of it and you see all the jewels on the ground, the crime scene set up, that is my let's see, it's 10 years. So it's like, that is my oldest son. He was the one who, we had him set up the jewelry robbery and put all the stuff. It's set deck by him. And that might've been the day that sent him to film school, because he's in film school now, because of how well and he did there and how excited he was. And
because his papa is so awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think he had it in him and he still remembers the day where he was so comfortable on set that Tim had finished the take and he raced over as soon as I yelled cut and walked over to him and said, that was pretty good.
That's awesome. That was awesome.
And Tim said, pretty good.
Was good. He's made for it. He's just made for it. One second. Hold on. Call me a baby.
Somebody okay.
Come on. There we go.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I haven't seen that for so long.
Baby. So, all right. We're here. So Sean and Gus, they have to go through with the job. They are instructed to head upstairs to the bedroom to blow open the safe. The two of them head up there with the hopes of stalling long enough for police to back up to arrive. When Sean and Gus enter the room, they realize it already looks like it's been robbed. There also isn't a safe. After looking around the room a little bit more, they find the dead body of another great name, Calvin.
I say there was there who I believe was murdered.
Yeah, there you go. That's how you kick off a new year.
That's exactly right, Tim.
His name was Calvin Dorchester. The duo then understands they've been set up. The job was an assassination, not a heist. As they turn to leave, Deirdre, which is also fun to say, is there, ready to kill them as planned. As she reveals how they were set up, Sean scans the room and puts some pieces together, remembering the things he found, out while at Ives's office. Ives put his job together as revenge on Dorchester, who cheated his late father out of the royal life that was rightfully his. Ronnie enters behind Deirdre to finish off Sean and Gus. Just as it seems this is the end, Despero swoops in and disarms both Deirdre and Ives just as backup arrives on site. Sean and Gus are saved, and they realize that Despero's real identity really is Royston Staley.
Ding, 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 ding. Sorry, I have a fun fact.
Yes.
So after Despero knocks out Ronnie, he falls and he collapses in front of Gus, and Gus says, "It's been emotional." That is the title of Vinny's memoir.
before it was written. I mean, it was a thing that Vinny had said in the movies, and then I'd asked Vinny. I was like, "Is there like a catchphrase that we can throw in as a wink?" And Vinny gave us that. So that was it worked out perfectly.
And so, it's still that he says it at emotional moments and goodbyes.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah. That was
sorry.
Oh no, I was just gonna say I think also in another set design or in another prop bit of magic, Despero sneaking out the back with a sack of like pirate booty type. It makes me laugh every time I see that he's just gonna leave Sean and Gus there to die, and he's stolen a couple candelabras that are gold.
That is, oh, wait. Sorry. Back at Interpol, Royston Despero is packing his things. Vim has suspected him. Vim has suspended him from Interpol for letting the case get out of hand. He leaves and Sean and Gus ready themselves for their journey back to Santa Barbara. Before they head to the airport, though, Sean and Gus stop for a drink at the Bloody Bucket pub. While there, they catch a glimpse of who?
The Dutch. Vim Stuyvesant.
Which I love that suddenly Gus goes, it's the Dutchman. And Sean Mitley goes to Rucker Hauer. Fun fact, I also worked with Rucker on The Amazing Show Galavan, which if you haven't seen Galavan, what's wrong with you?
So good. So good. Oh, they're just, they were on point, like banter-wise too with this. It was so good. Anyway, this leads them to believe that Despero hired this homeless,
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, they've hired a homeless man to play the part in order to make Interpol believe Vim was a real person all along, which then leads them to believe that Despero was the true mastermind behind everything. And once again, Sean and Gus are pretty much convinced that Despero set them up. It's so good. It's such a weird, it all works because
it's like you wrote Memento.
Yeah.
It's so hard to follow.
It's hard to follow, but then it all falls in. So yes, it's seen. This episode.
It's, you know what? It was for me, and I realized, like, I don't know, like let's say 2 years ago, I said to you guys, hey, my favorite Despero is the fourth one. And you guys both went. Because then I realized you guys, you're barely in it or you're not in it. I'm like, oh, not because of that. But yeah. because of the high wire act that we were allowed to dance upon. This is the most fun that you can have, just breaking all convention on your show, you know, and it was just, we were shooting it all in a different way and it all ended up, you know, it was what we wanted. It all really worked. It was really, just when you start talking about what the actual case was and the crime, there's so much in there. It was way more complicated, just the backstory of Ronnie's family than the story could have even held. And there's just so much going on, but the jokes are just so fast and furious. When I see it on television and I'm flipping the channels, I can never turn away from this episode because it's such a joyous, wonderful time. And Andy Berman always talks about it was the last time everybody was completely happy, because after this episode, one by one, every week, it was somebody's last day. People were going on to their next job. And the next time I came back, I directed two in this season. The next time I came back was to direct the finale, which was Maggie's last episode, Kirsten's last episode.
Shooting,
all that. So we'll talk about that at some point later. But the emotion level was through the roof. And then, of course, we were fortunate enough to shoot James's zombie episode last. So it was like a fever dream that no one even remembers.
Yeah.
It was the last, you know, towards the end, the last truly light moment before we were getting to the business of, wrapping up stories.
Yeah. 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 That's right. Because it did.
It's gonna be a hard season to podcast this shit out of. They're all gonna come on a ride with us.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun too, and we're getting to important things. We're getting to the Lassiter baby, and we're getting to stuff that's like we're finally, you know, moving the characters onto the rest of their lives. And so, you know, as hard as that is, I really am happy with the way that we did it. And I'm really happy with the way we buttoned everything up and then reopened it not too long later for movies. But this is the last time it was just, you know, it was all childlike fun and silly games.
That's silly. Like there's a lot of like season one vibes, even just there's such a fresh comedy in this one. I thought the guys were just like next level. Their banter. Yeah. Huh?
Good point, partner.
Yeah, like there's a real, almost like a throwback feeling to it, even though it's like one of the most incredible and wild episodes. Well, all right, with our time left, there are so many fan questions, Steve. So this
is what I'm going to say.
All right. We've kind of addressed that Juliet's not there. So I'm going to leave all those questions out.
Not my choice. Not my choice.
I would say, so some of the ones that were kind of really interesting to me, was there a lot of improvisation in this? Because I mean, there always is, but I also feel like in this one, I can believe that most of this was actually written.
Certainly a lot of it, because it was so intricately woven for better or for worse. But there was definitely, there's the moment where they're in the bloody bucket in the back room, and Ronnie Ives is going to cancel the job, and then Sean has to stand up and convince him that he's the crazy guy that he is. And then I wrote that Sean says, and I stand for the entirety of transatlantic flights. And James is one, he's like, I tuck it, and then there's the ocean. Like that whole thing, it's just, I couldn't write that. It's so good. But once again, laughing like crazy.
Yeah.
And the Deirdre, we did it, and that was a Kel bit that, was written, it's this much of a page. And James and Olivia kept it going for, I don't know, page and a half. It was so funny.
Here's some good ones too. How many takes? Okay, please talk about the spotted dick bloopers.
that was the thing. And usually you can't get Dulay. Every time James said spotted dick.
Yes.
He went down. And it's one of my favorite psych outs ever, because so we just made that the whole psych out for the premiere. It was hilarious. But the greatest thing about it is it's part of a oneer. So it's a steady cam leading them along the way. So we had to go back and reset on the other side of the room and walk all the way back to do it again. And every time it was so funny, and like we would start and then Dulé's already laughing. And there was a great. Go ahead.
With that, how many do we think they ended up eating?
They never actually see us.
Right?
We never see it. It's actually a dessert, and it actually looks way more delicious than you would expect it to.
That was one of the. I was like, I don't think they ate. Yes.
The funny thing to make it, because there's really two Tim Amundsen scenes there, where one where he asks him to go check and then Lasseter comes back. So what I needed is something in the room to justify Lasseter doesn't go away and then come back immediately. He didn't have time to figure out the information. So we were there, and so I just lined it up, and I looked, and there was a break area right there. And I said to Dulé, I'm like, if I go set up a scene, can you go swipe somebody's meat pie? And so we got props out, and they made the little meat pie, and Dulé did that entire thing, and it was like 3 minutes worth of secretly going through the thing and making the meat pie disappear in his Harry Potter robe. So it's just a talent to have a group of people to say, all right, go over there and give me enough time for a major plot point to happen.
Yeah.
And it does, and it was so fun. That location was fun. Everything was fun, but we had like 60% less time than we needed.
Yeah. That's a lot of people have this question. So, was it all a con? Is Despereaux a cop? What is the deal? Is he really Interpol? What is the deal?
I think you should search your heart and see. Do you believe? I mean, for me, I'm like Sean. I choose beauty. And I love that Gus is only on board when Sean tells him he can be the tiger Richard Parker.
That's so good.
It doesn't make any sense. He's just so excited that he's just in this analogy. He's going to be the tiger, but it works.
It's just like Kris Kringle. If you believe
it's real. So what do you believe? Okay, which scene was the most challenging to shoot stunt-wise, and did anyone use stunt doubles?
We did. We were not allowed to have James do the entire driving thing because it was inside a soundstage. but James did more of it than you would expect. And we also we drove that an actual version of that van all through the countryside.
Wow.
And the funny thing is, we could not find a right-hand drive. So I'm saying that right, right? So that actually, we actually just built another steering wheel and put it in there. And there's a guy driving who's out of view.
Oh my God. That's
you could so paint cute. That guy out now, but now it's just like, so
oh God.
So that was fun, but we did, and we did have a guy, but it wasn't one of our principals that leaped out of that vehicle onto the side of the road. And, Laster didn't do any of his own stunts, so obviously the explosion was a visual effect, which happened during.
I was doing my own stunts, but because Maggie wasn't there to insist I'm bubble wrapped, I couldn't.
Yeah, yes. Correct. I'd be like, right, we got to wrap him in bubble wrap. Yes. This did was Dule was Gus's wand a real Harry Potter wand? That's a question. That's so cute.
No, we had to build that ourselves because, you know, obviously you can do something that looks like it, but it couldn't be an actual. And since he was supposed to be a fan of this, we were able to do it, but it couldn't be 100% correct. And and for me, I love
that real whole thing. Feather?
The whole what?
Was it a real phoenix feather?
Well, it was a feather. It wasn't a legit phoenix feather from one of the birds. There's a moment in this that is so crazy in this episode where he wants Winston to play by Theo Devaney. I think that's the name of the guy's he did a great job where he says, he just wants Rupert Grint's address and Theo's and Winston's not going to get into it. And Gus is pulling out his wand to force him to do it via magic. And Sean stops him. And it goes by so fast. And it's like, to me, I laugh. I'm like, does Gus actually think that's going to work? Or does he think just by brandishing the the wand?
But
it's a moment that goes by so fast that I cherish because it's like, wait a minute, hold on, rewind that. What is he doing?
Yeah. Sorry. Last question: did we try to get Jason Statham?
No, we didn't. Okay. I mean, we had Vinny, so we didn't. Yeah. If you have Vinny, you don't need Jason Statham.
We had so many questions that were kind of similar that we've like already answered from that. Most of them about like Pierre Despereaux. Will he be back? Will he be in another movie? Is he Interpol? Was he not? Anyway.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm certainly hope so.
Yeah.
Because Despereaux was written into one of the movies and scheduling just didn't work out.
Yeah.
For that. And so it was with every intention to once again reopen that Pandora's box of will we, won't we? And I think we have a really spectacular way to bring him back.
That's so great.
We would certainly always love to do that and lean into it and do more Despereaux.
Do more Despereaux. Do you have any other notes or things you want to add in, Steve, before we go? Also, maybe you're right that we should get Kel as well, because we've never had Kel on, have we, Tim?
And we've not, and I love Kel.
Yeah.
This might be Kel. No, Kel co-wrote, I think, the Touch of Sweeble, which, by the way, has some of also the craziest stuff we've ever done. But definitely have Kel on, and let me just go through. Speaking of improvs, James says his hair is fine, silky as if spun by a fabulous spider. And then James is comparing his hair to Robert Fino's. It says mine is a helmet, a perfect brown helmet inspired by the lives of real beavers. That clearly is James.
That's clearly a James improv.
And let's see. I was very happy to get sympathetic learner in with Gus, and which is a tribute to Saladin Patterson, who's a sympathetic crier in all of that stuff. And then let's see the pottering, the picture of Gus pottering where you jump up in the air with a broom. Dule did that on the first take. We thought it was going to take a long time to do. And there are about three or four shots of it. All of them look amazing. He literally looks like he's flying every time he jumps up.
Dule Hill.
Yes, exactly.
Literally can do anything.
Let's see. And my dogs are saying hello to that.
My Linus can hear it in my headphones because his ears just perked up. He's like, wait, what?
I do love in the when they're trying to convince Winston, and there was that round window, that circular window that I put as many shots as I could up against. That was so spectacular. But I do love James saying it's the Brits and the Americans back together again, just like World War II, and this time we're gonna win. That is, to me, if I had to explain what this show was, I would quote that line.
That's good. That's a really good.
Hoping he was going to say, just like in Korea.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Kel's great line where he keeps talking about Harry Potter and Despero says stop talking about these silly children's films. He says those movies are your country's history. And then I have to go and I have to bring up improvs. I have to talk about Tim Amundsen's improv from this one, because the line Tim didn't you weren't happy with something that I'd written, and rightfully so.
How dare I?
We were just trying to explain what happened to Vin Stuyvesant and all that. So you went back and I said, well, give me another line that you like. And you came back like 3 minutes later and you said he got up one day and he went to go play with the Limeys. And I said, done. And now every time I hear go to play with the Limeys, I think about Tim on that day.
Oh, that's good, Tim.
That.
My God, that is so funny. On the back.
And then I think I also love Carrie's. This was something that Carrie really wanted to do, and I don't even know if he originated the whole bit, but calling Gus the wrong name.
Yeah,
he does throughout all four of them. And then the final one when he nods to him and he says Busby and walks away. It's magnificent, and I love it. And I also love
so quintessential our show.
When he's packing up his belongings and he's ostensibly been fired from Interpol, all the things he's packing into that box are things from the other Despero episodes. So it's actually the grappling gun that he used in the second one to go up to the top of the building. So if you're paying attention, which I sometimes am, then that's something that you can dig out of it. I did
catch the Rusty Dagger, but what was the Bulldog? I don't know what the Bulldog was from.
The Bulldog, I think, was just something there that Carrie liked. And I think we wanted to get the words of the last of my chattels. because talk about your great British words. Chattels is so perfect. So I think that was it.
This made me so happy. And to jump right back into season 8 is with this episode, and Steve, your like all of the stories and memories from it, and also the reminder of like where we all were, and like it's very emotional, and it's also like what a fun episode, as you were saying, to like kick off like the lightness before we go into like the heavy of like saying goodbye. And this episode is like so perfect for that. So many comments in the fan questions were just like, love this episode. I love this episode. I love this episode. It's just so, it's so our show. That's why I feel like there is like a nostalgia to it, almost like a season one feeling with all the coolness of like, and all the evolution of like where we went of season 8. Like, it's just crazy.
Well, what's so great, and this is about you guys. I know we're bumping up against. We got to go. By the way, happy birthday to Maggie's dad.
Oh, thank you. thank you.
This will be recorded in the past, but yeah. but it's such a testament to the crew and the cast that you know, not too long ago, we were doing The Shining, and that we're doing a musical, yeah. and we're doing yeah. found footage, and yeah. We're doing these wild, fantastical things. And yet, for the most part, they all seem exactly our show.
The same show. It's
sometimes,
incredible.
Sometimes we go a little off, we get one tire off the road, and we understand that. We plan to have one tire off the road.
Who else can say that? What show can say that? Yeah,
I don't incredible. Know.
Steven, I credit you as a director to do the guy to capture the Guy Ritchie style so masterfully.
That too. That's not easy, Steve. Like, so cool.
Well, and I think the thing I had at my disposal was I knew I was also putting Harry Potter and Sexy Beast in there. So it had to be this weird mishmash. Yeah. And by the way, once again, locations, the room that's Ronnie's office has this unbelievable giant window. It's like a cinema window. And it's so fantastic. We just use it for that little scene where they're breaking in. And the apartment was way wrong. So we just put curtains on either side to block out the rest of it, just so we could use that window. And it's worth it. And all these locations and the performances and you guys, and you know, this one was really special to me and a lot of fun. And then I'll see you guys later yeah. in the year when I come back, and it's all very serious, but still with a lot of emotional, happy stuff, but still very yeah. serious.
Yeah. I will also say, this is the first time in hours that I haven't had to sneeze. So thank you all so much for clearing up my sinuses for a moment.
I think Tim, you did it.
Yeah, Tim did it. Tim did it. He can.
Since I gave you the cold, then I.
Yeah, you can take it away. Steve, we love you so much.
And right so, back at you.
It's just like it brings all the energy and joy and fun back when we have you on. I mean, we always feel that, but like, there's something about actually feeling back in the actual energy of the show and what it was like on set. And that's what it always feels like when you're here. So thank you. We love you.
Said, and you really did help us podcast the shit out of it. Way to help us start really season eight, buddy.
I think I think we did the whole thing without mentioning Dulé's white suit, and that's amazing. So,
oh my God, can I tell you that was in my notes, and we went right past it, and I was like, you know what? I think it's okay, and I'm just gonna give a shout out because it was incredible. It was incredible. I wrote that down. I was like, Dulé Hill, white suit. I wrote in my notes anyway.
Okay, he looks amazing in it too,
as always. Steve, have a great rest of your day. Thank you. We will have you back probably in just a few weeks. And Tim, mwah, and well done, everybody. First one. Don't leave yet, please, Mara says. Yes, yes, ma'am. So should we sign off?
Sign off.
Bye, everybody. We love you, psychos. And what do we say, Steve? Do we keep psych for? Keep the hashtags, keep the noise going.
I think, you know what, eventually it'll have to go, right?
Yes, it does.
Absolutely. Make something at some point.
All right. Yep. You heard it, psychos. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Psychologists Are In. Please follow us on our Instagram at The Psychologists Are In, our Patreon, patreon.com/psychologistsarein. And we will see you next week for a very fun Seize the Day, which is episode two of season eight. This is going too fast, you all. We love you, psychos.